sound.
Two guys with no credentials.
Reviewing Rolling Stone 500.
Greatest album.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us once again here on the Sound Logic Podcast. And today we're discussing episode 93 on Rolling Stone Magazine's Top 500 Greatest Album list. This is Supa Dupa Fly by Missy Misdemeanor Elliott.
Hey, yeah.
The whole, yeah, she's got the whole thing. On the title. So, well, because she's off of just Missy Elliott, right? But the whole Missy Misdemeanor Elliott.
That's right.
If you're Missy, does that mean your name's Melissa? Yes, her name's Melissa. Sorry, all these nicknames, but some of them it's like you can figure it out.
That's right.
That I'm super smart. But.
Well, we have all those credentials, too.
Tons of them. Anyways, off to a great start.
a fantastic start. Good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, you too.
And we hope we can offer something. I got to admit, I am feeling some hesitancy, I guess. Partially because this album's very new to me, and I feel like maybe I haven't done as much work as I should have. But the other piece is that we recently had a comment from a new listener who found us because of our last Beyonce interview. They listened to that one episode, were not impressed with our awkward hesitation, as they put it, on some of our review, and said, "I'm done." I was like, "Oh crap!"
Okay. Well,
I mean, yeah, it's an album that both of us kind of, you know, didn't know much about and struggled with at times, and so. You know, we're figuring it out. Of course, there's no real way to have a meaningful conversation with someone on social media when they're responding in that way or in a podcast platform. But all that makes me do is think, you know, kind of second guess myself when we get to an album like this, which has a female artist who is from an ethnicity that's different, a cultural difference from my own. I guess all that to say, we're probably going to get some things wrong here, but we hope that you give us some grace and journey with us and find something new.
Yeah, and you know what? Hamburgers aren't for everybody. Sushi isn't for everybody. You know,
no, that's right. That's right.
The Sound Logic podcast maybe isn't for everybody.
Absolutely. The people pleaser in me doesn't always believe that, but yes, I agree.
I do recall that about you, buddy. Yeah, and I'm trying to let that go. And you know what? We've made it very clear that we never intended this to be, you know, we put
expertise
or, you know, 48 hours into everyone researching and listening, like it's a casual conversation, and unfortunately there are going to be some that were just less familiar with either the album itself or the genre or the artist. And you know what, I think the other thing we have been striving to do is just be genuine and authentic.
I think we usually hit that mark most times.
And you know, part of that is there are some that we just won't know a lot about, and we're doing our best.
Right.
And to me, I do like those because it takes me out of my element and I get to hear something brand new, like this album. I've never listened to this before.
Yeah.
An artist I don't think I've ever listened to a full album of hers. So some of her songs for sure. But anyways, that's a longer preamble than we usually do. So if that's your, you know, and to that person, they listened to the Beyonce self-titled album, right?
Right.
I wonder if they, you know, if they went and listened to Lemonade, if they'd get a bit of different flavor, because we had two guests for that. We had, we spent more time listening to it. We watched the visual companion, you know, to it and talked about that. And like, there was, you know, maybe we had a little bit more to say about that one. So, but that's okay. Anyways, this week, a hip hop album.
Yeah.
From the 90s. You just want some details, Ben? Should we do that?
Details would help.
Details. give us some more context. So, Supa Dupa Fly was released July 15th, 1997. A big year for women in hip-hop. I think, when did Miseducation of Lauryn Hill? Maybe was the next year. So there was a lot happening, to my recollection. This album, we talk about the writers. Now, every track was produced by Timbaland. Usually when we go through these hip-hop albums from all genres, really, especially when you get into the 90s and beyond, you have multiple writers and multiple different writers for every track, yeah. And multiple different producers for every track. And this one, Timbaland, Timothy Mosley, produced every track. It says right at the top, all tracks produced by Timbaland. So he was at the helm for the whole thing. The writers, and often are some of the performers, they shift up, except Timbaland and Missy Elliott are co-writers on, I would say, it looks like just about every track, except for the intro, which is just written by Busta Rhymes.
At Timbaland, before we go too far, is a, as far as producers go, pretty well-known name.
Oh, man. Absolutely.
He's contributed to a lot of different albums, not always in as intensive a way as this. I was somewhat surprised, though, in flipping through his numerous credits on his Wikipedia page that we haven't gotten to more stuff that he's been involved with. He's done a couple tracks for Jay-Z and a couple tracks for Beyonce on Blueprint and her self-titled album, if I'm remembering correctly. But I think that was it of the albums we've tackled so far. I was a little bit surprised. I thought we would have spent more time with his music, and maybe I skimmed over something or missed something. There's other stuff on the list that I think we'll get to eventually. But I was sort of surprised. I felt like we've talked about him before, but maybe it's because we just talk about lots of different things. And
I remember in the early 2000s, it seemed he was popping up everywhere. Not that he wasn't before, but in the
crossing
mainstream
genres too.
Absolutely, Nelly Furtado. He was a Canadian artist. He produced one of her big albums and a lot of tracks there. You can hear the influence. I think at least the first two, maybe Justin Timberlake albums, huge.
Yes, very involved with Justin Timberlake.
Very involved in those. Yeah. So and many, many others. So yeah, we see even here in the 90s in this album, and you hear his influence, even some ad libs, just all over this album as well.
Drake, I think, is another one that we will get to here soon. That he's been a part of at different times in Drake's journey. So yeah. It's not the last time we'll hear from him, but I was just surprised. No. I thought we'd seen him more up to this point, but I guess not.
Maybe not. This album went to number 43 in Canada, 16 in the UK, number 3 in the US, and was number 1 on the US R&B hip hop album chart. It's certified 1.2 million in the States and 60,000 in the UK. I don't have any other certification, so well over a million. This is her debut album. She released 4 singles. I don't remember 4 singles. I remember 2. The Rain, Sock It To Me, Beat Me 911, and I'm going to do my best to do this one. Hit 'Em With The He. Does that sound right to you, Ben?
Sure. 1997, were you already into your much music phase at that point?
Okay,
so that's probably where you would have got it. I felt very in the dark with anything here.
Yeah.
I was a little bit surprised by how little I knew for an artist that was so prominent in the late 90s when we were consuming so much music. Another reminder that even when I think back fondly with the days of walking out of Future Shop with armloads of CDs, there was so much music being put out then that I was not engaging with. So yeah.
So are you saying now that you might not have said at the time, but now you actually admire me for buying a a Busta Rhymes album in the late 90s when I found $20 in the parking lot?
We'll get to Busta Rhymes here when we start talking about the tracks.
Okay. The first note I want to make about this album, other than those general details, is really significant guest appearances and personnels on here, like just people who were really already big or were going to be very, very big in the hip hop world. So we got Busta Rhymes, talked about him, Lil Kim, Da Brat, who you might not remember, a group called it's a singing group. I'll say girl group, although I don't like that term. 702, Magoo, who was he was one half of Timbaland and Magoo, was a duo that they did. Got Ginuwine, we all remember Pony. of course, the late Aaliyah, her and Missy were very close, and so she's featured. A couple others I don't recognize, but I mean, pretty big names in the hip hop and R&B world.
Yeah, especially for a debut album to, you know, she's got this kind of interesting journey where she was signed originally as part of a group, part of a girl group, and recorded an album that never got put out and had kind of a falling out with her label at that point, wound up staying sort of in the industry and connecting with people like Timbaland. But I think that track record, even though she hadn't broken through, meant she had contacts and connections enough to get a very significant record deal, and apparently a big enough deal to also be able to draw in some of these other artists, which is pretty fascinating.
Oh yeah, lots of connections there. Let's talk about this album cover. This is, so we talked a lot about some of the hip-hop albums from the 90s. I think the vast majority, if not all of them, that we've discussed so far have male leads, whether it's a group or... Yeah. And we talked about this swagger, this attitude on the front. And we get kind of a different version of that here, which is really, really interesting. And instead of being the overtly explicitly sexual, and I'm not saying this isn't sexual, we get this kind of different sort of swagger confidence, and the Missy Elliott has never been afraid to do things differently to stand out, and this album cover is no different. The font is really neat, actually. I really like this one, really playing around with the size of the font. Super Duper Fly is in black capitals in red, and it's like not totally lined up. It's, again, you should Google the image as I describe it. And Missy Misdemeanor Elliott is really, really small comparatively. It's like overlapped as black capitals, but it's like overlaid over top. And she's playing around with the color. And there is a fly, like a green fly.
Right after Fly.
Beside where it says Fly, which is kind of fun.
But it almost reminds me of a movie title on a movie poster where the name of the movie is really big and then like the leading cast member is kind of very small font below it. In the way
wouldn't it remind you of maybe a 70s flick? Maybe Superfly?
Yeah. Is there a nod to it?
Well, I haven't read that, but I would expect... that there is.
Feels like it might, huh?
But you get with that big oversized S and just kind of the way it is there. Yeah, I think for sure. So that's the top right. The top is kind of a backdrop of like red, like velvety curtains. And Missy's sitting on an ornate couch. You can kind of see the gold painted wood on the top. She's got a baseball jersey that says Missy on it, and she's got her feet up facing us, so the sole of her foot like covers the bottom right quarter of the image.
And those clean white sneakers
yes
kind of became her thing too.
Yeah, absolutely. and all you know, white, lots of like white pants, white top.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just to me, it's confidence. Really, really cool image. She's got her hand kind of behind her head, her arm behind her head, kind of. We'd call it, you know, power pose.
Yeah.
maybe usually more of a, well, it doesn't matter. Gender doesn't matter. That's power pose. Yeah. So that's, and of course, down in the bottom left, we've got your, do they still do it on albums? Parental advisory, explicit
language. So, yeah.
Still there, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, still there. I felt like it was it new in the 90s?
Yes.
Or late 80s, early 90s. So yeah, you just feel like all of a sudden you were just seeing it everywhere. And it felt like
a political movement, right? And in response to rap and hip hop to protect our children, there was a conservative movement to make sure that these albums had had that label on to protect our children here in the United States anyway.
You must have brought that up before.
I think so, because I think it was in that Public Enemy kind of era when that started to started to occur. I think that's right. Yeah.
Interesting. Anyways, that's there, and I mean, it's not false.
Right.
There is explicit language, but anyways, that's the cover. Really, really neat shot. Again, look that up if you're not familiar with it. Could do much more justice than me just describing it. Anything else on that before we move on?
I like it a lot. I read an article this week that talked about this album kind of redefining what hip hop can be, partially because of the style of music that she and Timbaland sample, chose to sample, a little bit more of a laid back vibe. You can almost see this as a bridge to eventually getting to Lauryn Hill. But I like that you've noticed kind of a different kind of swagger here, because she's kind of reinventing the genre in some ways with this album too. It's so interesting that whether that was intentional or not, the album cover kind of parallels the pivotal moment of the genre as well. I hadn't even drawn the link to Superfly and Super Dupa Fly before looking at it too. I feel silly now to have not caught that.
Not uncommon for a hip hop album to have a large amount of tracks for a single album. So 17 tracks, although some of those are, you know, an intro, outro, an interlude, some spoken word, but still a lot of tracks.
Yeah. Yeah. What's it clock in at? It's, an hour long. So it would be
exactly 1 hour.
Yeah, it's certainly into that late 90s where they're taking advantage of more space on a compact disc than a record.
Just a general comment before we get into some specifics. This was new to me, but one thing I noticed right away, I really, like, you can hear, well, two things. I really like her flow, and you can hear how it's different. And she, I think, would go on to make it even more different. And even if you listen to some of her later stuff within a song, like different styles of rapping. So here it's a little more similar within the album, within the song, but still is different than what was happening. It's really, really good. I had to look into it when I started listening, because I'm hearing all these. I did not realize, because a lot of the, I think there's, okay, usually most rappers, hip hop artists, most of them don't sing on their albums. And usually, even with female rappers, I mean, not Lauryn Hill, because we knew she did both on that album, and from the Fugees as well, but you'd have a guest in. So I heard a female singing voice, and immediately right away thought, like, she's got a guest in here, because I just wasn't familiar, and I started like, okay, who's singing? And there's no singing credit except for the song with Aaliyah. So then I'm listening more and looking in, like, she's singing as well. And I did not realize, because a lot of the popular songs that she's done that I'm familiar with, she doesn't sing as well.
Yeah.
So all the vocals, the singing that you hear, it's her. She's got a really great singing voice. Yeah, I had no idea. So I'm hearing this voice, just assuming it's someone else, and then listening more closely, going, "Oh my goodness, she's I was surprised. I call it, it's my own ignorance, but I was just very surprised by that, pleasantly surprised.
Same year as Baduism, and kind of interesting. They both have like a really chill, laid back singing voice that it's really quite lovely to just have on in the background. I don't often say that about hip hop albums that we're listening to, that I like wouldn't mind it to be background music, but there's something like kind of conveys some really a different kind of attitude again, in the way that she's got it here with that singing, like you mentioned.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just, again, just showcasing her incredible talent. On this album, on the debut album, we've discussed so many wonderful debut albums. Like, to produce something this good the first time is just really, really incredible. So that was something that stood out to me, was the not just the rapping, but the singing as well. Just fantastic. You were asking me about, like, was this in my Much Music era? Yes, definitely. I remember when these songs came out. I remember The Rain. I remember the lyric on Hills Like Lauren, which was always made me laugh. Clever. And I remember Sock It To Me because it's a really funny video. They're wearing, it's this trio of female superheroes, Missy and Lil' Kim and Debrat, on some planet, you know, and very, very exaggerated, almost animated, like feeling like these almost styrofoam oversized outfits and gloves that look like punching gloves, almost like something you'd see in that, what's that, that Wipeout show?
Oh yeah,
where you see people all dressed up. It's called Wipeout. I knew what it was called.
The Wipeout show.
The show where they wipe out. The show called Wipeout. The show where they wipe out, called Wipeout. That one. Takeshi's Castle, I think it was in Japan. Anyways, we don't need to go down that. I remember that video. I thought it was really just fun. But I mean, she's become, you know, notorious for releasing these extremely artistic, complicated, wild, amazing videos that are, I don't know if you've watched any of her other videos, Ben, but they're just they're incredible. Like, they're some of them are a little weird, but I mean, they're just pushing the envelope. Like, these ones are a little more, like, they don't have as many different parts as some of her later ones.
Yeah.
They have like all these like different scenes and motifs throughout. Like, one of my favorite is Work It, and it's got like just so many different things happening in it. It's like watching 10 different videos at once. But yeah, I do remember those. I remember those videos for sure. 100%.
I did a little bit of a whiplash here when I heard Pass the Blunt and caught,
I was gonna mention that,
caught the reference to Pass the Dutchie, which is in my mind anyway, a much more well-known song by Musical Youth, Jamaican UK group from the 70s, playfully sang about passing the Dutchie, which I think went over some people's heads, and Missy just gets a little bit more to it and says it's just past the blunt instead of blunt. Calling it something else.
It's a direct, I guess they call it an interpolation on that song. Yeah. And I thought this might have got a little maybe come back into the zeitgeist, because last year, maybe not quite a year ago, when Stranger Things came out, season four, and the songs in that became really, really viral. Like, we talked about Kate Bush already.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Master of Puppets very soon. That's just a few albums away, and that song again exploded. And then Past the Duchy was in that season.
Oh, featured no way.
Many, yeah, many times. So that you'll see all over, you know, TikTok and all over the place. I'm surprised that this hasn't squeaked also in there as well as kind of, you know, because it plays on that. A lot of references to cannabis use on this album, which is not uncommon. We've heard that in, you know, the 90s hip hop we listened to. I mean, I think it's...
Yeah.
Didn't hear it as much in the albums from the 80s that we've listened to, the rap albums from the 80s.
Right.
Again, that big shift, you get into the 90s, get into 92, 93, and all of a sudden with Wu-Tang, Dr. Dre, Biggie, you know...
Snoop.
Snoop. In that, in Juicy, you know, Big Papa, got the Chronic by the Tree.
Oh yeah, right.
You know, and all sorts Good of memory. References. Yep. Oh, I've got lyrics buried back there.
For someone who's not a lyrics guy, they find their way in and just
tucked away in there.
Just bury.
Once I listen to them, so we hear again. That's a theme that's not unfamiliar if you're into hip hop. So we hear that throughout, which again, especially, you know, in the 90s, it's big in everywhere, but in hip hop culture with the artists, but it's still not legal anywhere, I don't think. I think Colorado was what, the first state to start to legalize it, Ben? And I don't know when that happened.
Yeah, right at that time. Yeah, that's a good point.
Mid-90s,
still not
right?
So in a lot of different places.
There are more states that it's legal or illegal to a certain degree. I think Colorado was one of the first, but at this time, I don't know. So then, that's just another element of it being, you know, a little more off limits, a little more dangerous, problematic for some people. You talked about the political nature of, you know, the explicit lyrics, and I'm sure that doesn't get that sticker put on it, but probably. That contributes to some of that as well.
Yeah, it's something that I found myself struggling with a little bit as I was getting into this music was, I don't know if it's because of a more feminine sounding voice, but I'm not as troubled by some of the lyrical content of this album when it's a woman singing or rapping. And there's something in my biases that... you know, that reacts differently, I guess, to parental advisory content when it's a man or a woman. And in a very sort of old school, traditional kind of sense of that, too. I mean, gender is a lot more complicated and complex than that. But I found myself kind of, you know, asking why is it that I'm okay having this album on where every song has an explicit lyric tag beside it on Spotify, but not so much some of the other stuff that we've listened to. Maybe there's a different kind of aggression to her voice. She's not like it's almost a jarring contrast to have Busta's intro where he kind of, you know, he's got that aggressive barking masculine voice compared to her softer, soothing kind of attitude that she comes across with. It's an interesting contrast.
Yeah, I was a little uncomfortable with some of it, some of the more sexual lyrics.
Okay.
But still, the I agree with you. The aggressive, almost threatening nature of let's use kind of one of the extremes that we've discussed was the Wu-Tang, you know, you almost feel like attacked.
Yeah, good example.
Lyrics, some of that. I think that's probably the for me, and I think for you too, was the strongest, where I felt almost threatened by the lyrics.
Right.
Very, very aggressive. Some of it very violent too. But just the nature of it. So I can see what you're saying, and there's a softer delivery here. You mentioned earlier it's similar to to Erykah Badu, released the same year, where it's a little more chill, a little more relaxed. But yeah, maybe because it's a female, we don't feel as,
kind of hiding,
as threatened
plain
by
sight. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think it's in its nature nearly as aggressive as some of the other things we've listened to.
Yeah, perhaps not.
Even though some of it is quote explicit.
Yeah.
I think now's a good time to talk about tracks, and let's pick our favorites.
Okay.
For the playlist, we do have a playlist, SoundLogic Favorites on Spotify. Pick two tracks for every album. Ben, did you have a favorite here?
I think I will lean towards a couple of the singles. Suck It To Me and The Rain are probably my two favorites if I have to pick. Those ones, you know, probably for their radio hooks are the ones that stood out to me, aside from Pass the Blunt, which stood out for different reasons. What about you? Maybe you could help me.
I was going to pick one of those. One of those anyway.
So okay, perfect.
Let's just pick those two. I was going to pick one of those. They're really good. There's other good, really good ones here too. But I like those, and I think they represent the album well. They were successful. I really like Sock It To Me, actually. I think it's fun. I like the horn arrangements. She does a lot of, there's like vocal, group vocals. Like she's harmonizing with herself there. And I think it sounds really good. So yeah, I like that one a lot.
Missy fans might be concerned that we, chose fairly popular songs. I was about to say, well, just come back on the next Missy album that we do and join us as a guest. Unfortunately, this is the only one of hers that makes it here, which is kind of interesting, given her, you know, career spanning.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking a lot this week about her somewhat surprise appearance at the Super Bowl.
I was just going to bring that up when you said, Yeah, about that. Yeah,
the legacy that she's
she made a guest appearance when Katy Perry did the Super Bowl, and what happened was afterwards you had all these comments from a younger generation saying, "Wow, who's this? Like these songs are great," as if she was like a new artist, and all of us, you know, older millennials are going, "No, she's been awesome for a long time," and her song started charting again because of it, and I think it's an interesting look at, and this isn't a new thing, how quickly people can go in and out of, you know, popularity or being viral or being, you know, just relevant. Not that she's not relevant, but just in terms of being kind of it, you know, at the time, but it was great because people were discovering her music again, the people who hadn't before, and going, oh, what is this, and it really fits with a lot of the new stuff, and especially because Timbaland has produced so much stuff over the years, his fingerprint is on a lot of popular music, so you get that common thread, and so people are listening to that, and maybe even subconsciously they're hearing some of the same things that they've heard other places, which is amazing. Again, not to take the credit away from her, but just that her
good
music is really, really influential and still very relevant. So, that's it. But it is interesting that none of her other albums are on here.
Yeah,
but this one is. But I mean, as a first one, as really that. You know, really trend-setting for hip-hop in the late 90s, for women in hip-hop and women in R&B in the late 90s. Like, really, really important album.
Yeah. Did she do Get Your Freak On with Katy Perry? I'm misremembering that, too. Anyway.
I can't remember which song she did.
She's got some huge, huge songs that...
But she did...
Yeah, are just enormous.
What, you mean in that performance?
Yeah.
Well, she came out and did one of her songs, for sure.
Okay.
I can't remember if it was Get Your Freak On or if it was... Yeah, I think it was. I think you're right.
Okay.
Because that's certainly one of her biggest singles. But yeah, sometimes, you know, people kind of... you know, a new generation or a new few years go by and a new group of listeners aren't as familiar, you bring them back in. But yeah, it's so funny when that happens, people go, who's this new artist? That's not a new artist.
Yeah, right.
we grew up with that.
Yep. We've kind of been talking about relevancy, I guess, here in this conversation. What do you think about its place on the list?
Well, just before we get there, you know, in terms of what's aged well, I think some of the production, like some of the different sounds, maybe aren't used as much and maybe might sound a little dated, but I think in general this style is still quite relevant and is still used. So I think you could play this on the radio or in a club and a lot of it would still be very well accepted. I think because her and Timbaland have stayed, like, they are still relevant as artists.
Yeah, good point. I like that. And I don't, like, similar to our review of Lauryn Hill and similar to our review of Erykah Badu, like, I think we're still hearing music like this
being
published right now. Even though it's, you know, two decades old, it still feels like it could be released tomorrow. And
I think the influence of this album and the other ones that you just mentioned is still being felt in the music being made, right?
Yep.
People, and it's people who are making music who were, you know, kids when that came out and now are making their own music.
That's right.
And are using that, right? Absolutely. The position, this is 93. I don't need it to be this high. I really like it on the list.
Okay.
I think it should be on the list 100%. I think in the same breath, I'm happy for more women being represented in the top 100. That part I really of course is fantastic. And it should be. As we go through and as we get further along, as much as I like the diversity and I like that there's more hip-hop artists and hip-hop albums in the first 100 albums here, I'm almost starting to get the sense that they were sprinkling in as much as they could just for diversity's sake. Not to say that they're not good albums, not to say that those artists don't deserve to be here, but you almost get the sense that were they just trying to get a little bit of everybody just to make somebody happy or to make it look more diverse? This is, again, getting away from the idea that it was a straight poll and they just went, you know, well, because, you know, I've always been a little cynical that, you know, they took in all the surveys, put it through a computer, it spit out the numbers. They said, yep, good. I'm sure they looked at that as kind of a framework and kind of a starting point, said, okay, now let's just tweak this a little bit. Who wouldn't, you know, like, I'm sure they did. But again, I just get the sense sometimes that maybe they were just trying to get as much different albums in here. And that's not bad in and of itself. But if that's not really what was relevant, or if the other albums, if the older rock albums from the 60s and 70s that were on the initial list aren't relevant anymore, then they shouldn't be here as much as they are. And they should be moved down if these are the ones that truly are relevant. So I don't know, because I don't really know the answer to that.
Generally, I think I like your conspiracy theories. But this one, I think when I look at the list of the people that they were interviewing this time or who submitted, like, it makes a lot of sense to me that
it aligns more, doesn't it?
That not necessarily. Yeah, I guess our peers, a lot of our, you know, people who were born in the late 70s, early to mid 80s, would pick Missy to be on a list like this. So, yeah, and I don't disagree that there's probably some nudging to fit an editorial idea of what the list should be, but I think it makes a lot of sense for her to have an album, especially if it's true, that, as some of the articles articulated that I looked at, that she she was pretty pivotal in changing a genre, or changing a genre expectation of what the sound could be. I think it makes sense to have her here in the top 100. It's not certainly not an album I would pick for the top 100, but I can see how she winds up here, and for the reasons you mentioned, the continuing to elevate female artists, and continuing to remind ourselves of how important diversity is in music, I think it makes a lot of sense for her to be present here.
You mentioned, Ben, there's no other albums by Missy Elliott. I'm sure she'll make an appearance somewhere. But that's it. Just the one.
Yeah.
Kind of a shame. I would have liked to talk about some of the other albums.
But before I go,
maybe I will. Sometimes.
Yeah.
I just
want to thank
God.
Yeah.
I'll just bring them up.
Yeah. There we go. Once we get through this list, and then we go back and do all the ones from the 2012 list and 2003 list, then we can start pulling in random albums that we think were overlooked.
I think you just gave me a headache.
Not to mention any other future reiterations of this list.
They're going
to
have a new list before we get there. Oh, man. We're going to be in the retirement home doing this. At this
never
rate.
Ends. That never ends. That's why we picked it.
That's what we picked it is. It's yeah. Just the gift that keeps on giving.
That's right.
What we got coming up next week, Ben?
Yeah, next time, boy, we've talked a lot about just how much our genres have shifted in the last few albums here. And again, we're jumping to the early 70s, 1970, in fact, to an album by the Stooges called Funhouse. I think we've both said that we don't really know what this album will hold, but I think it's going to have some punk influences and some attitude, some swagger. We'll have to see when we get there.
Yeah, this will be, I think I will know less about this than I do about Super Duper Fly. but we'll find out.
That'll make two of us.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Ben, for the conversation. It was fun to connect again and go through this.
Absolutely.
And I hope we didn't stumble through it too much for you folks who are more familiar than this.
Yes.
To this than we are, but feel free to let us know how you thought we did, and anything you want to add, we'd be happy to hear from you.
Thanks, everyone. We will see you next time.
Yep. Until then, we hope you continue to be well, you take care of yourselves and those around you, and we certainly hope you'll join us again right here on SoundLogic Podcast. Take care, everyone. If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.